Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanel here, Tommy. How are you going, by the way? You going all right?
Running out of breath in the intro.
Interesting.
What's causing you to have, like, respiratory issues, Tommy? My name's Adam Knox.
I've caught the world famous and deadly novel coronavirus. First, it came for Adam Knox, and I said nothing because I was not Adam Knox. And then
second, it came for Adam Knox.
Yeah.
And I said nothing again because I'm still not Adam Knox.
Pretty happy to see it, if anything.
And then it came for you, and that's where it ends. It's a rule of threes, no more.
We've got to stop it there. If it goes one more person, it will be so fucking annoying.
Yeah.
It truly will.
Yeah, so apologies that we're over Zoom again, but Ben, you got a lot of, as the only currently healthy member of the crew, boy oh boy, get those arm muscles out, you got a lot of lifting to do on this one.
All right, I'm ready to go. I've been drinking a lot of coffee. I ate a delicious smoked salmon roll from a Japanese bakery. Ooh. I'm juiced up, I'm ready to fuck.
All right. It's cool to know now that, like, I'm the John Lennon of the podcast, went down first. Tommy, the George Harrison.
Yep.
And then Ben, either.
Yep.
Paul McCartney or Ringo Starr.
Right.
Which one do you reckon's first?
Which one's going to be first to cark it?
Don't guess, just in case you are right, and then everyone will be mad at you.
True. They'll both die on the exact same day at age 100.
Yeah.
I'm doing some work for, like, this advertising thing at the moment, and they wanted to do, like, you know, do these little videos that are just for an ad. And one of them was to do with the Queen's birthday weekend, which they want to tape far ahead of time because that's over in July, I think, the Queen's birthday weekend.
I think so, June or July, yeah.
And in the meeting, it was really awkward having to go, like, maybe that's not a good idea because she might be dead by then. There's a really good chance. Like, that might be a waste of time to sort of pre-film that one and be making jokes about the Queen.
Those moments in your life where you're looking around the room and you're like, am I going to be the only one who's thought of this? I'm going to have to be the one to put my hand up. Now, Adam, when you say you're working on this ad, is that a roundabout way of you saying you're playing the Queen in this ad?
Look, I can't. I'm under an NDA, which stands for no damn Adam playing the Queen. I still have COVID too. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah. Exactly. There's currently two people, like, in the throes of COVID. Mm. One's maybe on the way out.
I'm definitely. I've hit the bottom. I've hit that trough point, and I'm coming back up. But I tell you what's hard: climbing out of a pit. Mm. So I'm still not having a good time.
Yeah, I'm slopping around in the trough. I'm just.
Oh, you've got way further down to go. You've got more muck to slide through.
Yeah,
100%. You're like day one here. The worst is yet to come. For you.
Get the snorkel out, brother, because you're diving deeper down.
Trough me up, baby. I love it.
Say hello to Mariana while you're down there. At the bottom of that.
Now, Knox, there will be a Queen still in July. It'll just be Camilla potentially.
Or maybe, or Kate if Charles abdicates.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen? Oh, it's interesting living through history, isn't it?
I hope it's like Game of Thrones and there's a huge war. Harry and William and Charles, they all go to war.
That's what I'd love. Mm-hmm. Another war going on.
The dream scenario for you would be to experience this from the inside. The ad goes live on the day that the Queen cucks it.
Oh,
that is going to be...
She laughs so hard at my hilarious antics in my Queen wig.
Yeah.
Walking around going like, I'm
a Queen. She had another 6 years in her, but this just really got her.
It was a hell of a laugh. All the best to the Queen and to Paul McCartney and to Ringo Starr.
Yeah,
I say it's interesting living through history, but yeah, it's also painful. Other than living through the history of video games,
that's true.
Right.
Well, Adam, the Queen may still be around in July when you film this ad, but I'll tell you something that definitely is not going to be around in July.
Oh, brother, you're still firing on all cylinders. That's one of the best segues.
The view from the bottom is beautiful, gentlemen.
You're looking at the stars. E3. E3's gone. Kaput.
Yeah.
So it was going to be another digital E3, and they've cancelled that and said we'll be back in 2023. They did say that they'll be back in 2023, but it's hard to imagine that the carcass of E3 won't be picked clean by then by Jeff, what's his name? Who's doing Summer Games Fest still.
Keighley.
Yeah, Keighley.
Keighley.
Yeah, and especially after last year's one ended with, I've seen a lot of people post this, a little graphic saying, see you next year. Like already a very rocky last couple of years for them. And to just straight up do nothing this year, I think is, like we've been saying it for the last couple of years, that, yeah, it's pretty shaky ground for them. But I thought last year's one was good. I thought the digital-only event worked. I liked it. I thought there were a lot of good announcements. Like I had a good time watching it all. I don't quite get what's why you wouldn't just do that again to keep the ball in the air. It's fair enough to doubt that you'll be able to do it in person, but to kind of just, you know, if your plan is to keep the brand alive through 2023, you got to do something.
My guess, based on nothing, based on no insider info, based on no rumors to this effect, but my guess would be
Switch
that
pro.
The people who have who did signed up for the E3 digitally last year, the people who were there and did pay their dues to be in that showcase, have had another year to question, like, well, was that fucking worth it? Because we could have put that all out. Like, the idea of going through a middleman who is asking you for money on the internet is not the way that people like to do business on the internet.
Unless it's patreon.com/filthycasuals.
That's no middleman. Well, yes, actually, yeah, I guess it
yes,
is.
There is Patreon. They specifically do take a percentage of the donations.
But there's no other way that we could put our stuff up. You know what I mean?
Sure there is. There's heaps of ways.
Not we could just put our bank details up and get people's money directly. But
well, go sign up for patreon.com/filthycasualspod while it's still there.
Yeah.
But no, like it's... It does just seem more and more pointless each year, especially like I think you feel the same way, at least, Tommy. And I'm not sure if you're as invested, Ben, but I really like having a big block where all the video game news happens. I like that. I realize that that's the equivalent of like going, oh, what's wrong with a phone call? And it's just outdated now. Like there's no.
It's fun. It's a fun. It's like it's kind of the video game equivalent of like people getting really revved up for like, you know, a grand final or anything that's just like a centralized kind of concentrated most eyes on this thing that you're really into all at once. And there's the kind of discourse is all kind of happening in the same time at the same place for just like 1 week, when generally it tends to be very scattered. People kind of pay attention who may kind of zone in and out of these sort of announcements over the year. So I kind of like that sort of the almost kind of like sport aspect of it, of like as a press conference is happening or just after it's happening, like getting into a, you know, a Facebook group or whatever, and you've got everyone talking about this thing at the same time, which
it's like the Olympics in that case, right?
Yeah,
where it's like, oh, okay, this event is the one I'm interested in. Now let's get a couple of people around. And but for me, it's too much. It's too much content. Like I prefer, like, if you did Microsoft does E3, or Microsoft does yearly conference in August, and they show off 53 games, and then, you know, EA does one in September, and, you know, like, I need more time to pass all the information. Like, it's too many games. I was just scrolling then back through the 2021 E3 recap website, which is that one that I think a separate, you know, entity creates, and it aggregates everything. There's like 8 pages, and each page has about 40 games on it. Like, it's so much stuff. And I would prefer it parceled out, which is probably what's going to happen. That if it, if it's like Microsoft doing some stuff, Nintendo doing some stuff, and Sony obviously already doing their independent stuff, do it a few weeks apart. Do it a month apart each, and then, hey, podcast, got heaps of content.
That's true. Yeah, I wonder
they
if...
They aren't thinking about the podcasters, are they?
I wonder if we will end up with a bit of a kind of de facto E3 situation anyway, because, certain companies, it's just going to suit them still to hold their conferences at that same time that E3
right,
will happen anyway for whatever kind of...
End of financial year, start of financial year sort of time. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, because what did Sony... Sony weren't there, but then they did something like a month later or something like that.
That sounds right.
Not even that far. And Nintendo's directs have technically not been a part of E3 for a while.
Right. But they happen at the same time. So they're kind like they. I imagine they'll still do that same time frame.
Because while, like, I agree that I'll look at video game news throughout the year, it does sort of benefit everybody to all kind of go, all right, well, we'll all make a whole bunch of noise right now so that if people look at one thing, they'll probably see the other thing as well. And, like, also we can kind of drown out the other guy's noise and announce our thing that we think is better. Like,
yeah,
that big swirl has a point to it for people who are, I suppose, less plugged into everything. Has done traditionally. Like, whether or not that's still the case with the way that media stuff is now, I don't know, and maybe it isn't that way. But I also like being surprised there. I feel like that's one of the only times when you can kind of watch something as it's happening and genuinely get a nice little surprise about something, you know, because most of the time when you see an announcement for a new thing now, it's because some other fucking person on Twitter or some idiot on a podcast tells you about it. And you don't get to have the thing that isn't important but is enjoyable of, like,
going,
oh, wow, I can't believe they're making a sequel to the most successful video game of all time.
I
can't honestly think of any of those moments for me with video games where it's like, oh, cool, the end of that presentation made me feel excited. You know, it's like, I don't know, either I... And this is looking back over maybe the last 5 or 6 years, and I never watched E3 before we did the podcast or was ever tapped into it. But I've probably been aware of it before the E3 thing, and it's like a confirmation where it's like, oh, it does look good. Which is why I tend to just find most of these events like fine, generally good. It's like, oh yeah, cool, here's some video games. I don't have an expectation to be surprised, and they're generally not awful, but sometimes they are. So I don't know. I just, my attachment is different. It's more like, yeah, why don't we just have like a half hour Sony thing in April and then a Nintendo one in May? Like, I don't know.
There is something about the kind of the ecosystem of E3 that I think, you're right, Adam, has in the past led to people going like, this is where you really try and surprise people. And also as an audience member, where a lot of people go, this is where stuff's going to happen that really knocks your socks off. And a lot of the time that expectation isn't fulfilled. I think when people walk away and go, bit of a shit E3, it's because they were expecting, you know, some kind of like huge revelatory things to come out. And really all it is just like, oh yeah, here's some sequels.
The last time I recall it happening genuinely for me, I think, was when they announced like the God of War reboot, I think in 2016, which was unexpected. I mean, they really had put that thing to bed. and driven it into the ground with like doing a couple too many sequels and whatever. And then seeing that new take on it that they had sort of in front of you with this reboot thing was cool. But that was 6 years ago. So right. Like, it yeah. doesn't
and
happen
I remember,
all the time.
I remember us being really excited, and me included, for the Red Dead 2 announcement, but that was just through Rockstar.
That was
but
separate.
I do remember being into that, but it was totally just on their social media. So it wasn't an E3 thing. But yeah.
It's brave new world.
In a bigger context, it is kind of weird to see something at this point when so much of the dialogue in the world is focused on it's time to get back to life. It's time to get the world cranking again, and you know, things to be happening as they always happened pre-2020, and then to have this big company go, nah, we're not gonna roll the dice on an in-person event this, you know what I mean? It's like a little jarring to kind of still see a place going like, nah, probably doesn't feel that good. It's a bit like, whoa, what? This is kind of at odds with how everyone else is sort of behaving at the moment.
Right. I mean, when we've had to collectively cancel half our shows for Comedy Festival because of, you know, it's not an insane decision, but I would imagine that it is a business decision before it being a public health concern.
Yeah,
would be
for
my
sure.
instinct for this.
Especially in America, right? Like, they, you know, I was watching the college basketball final yesterday, and that is in a stadium of like 60,000, some crazy, like, you know, there's less public health concerns in general by the infrastructure and the systems in America than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So,
and when it's like year four of hearing, oh, it's crumbling, it's all falling apart, E3's dying, like it looks as though it's not because of COVID primarily, to me.
Maybe, I would agree, yeah.
Maybe E3's doing the thing where like, when the comedy festival was called off at the start of 2020 and every person online was like, why don't you just live stream your show? And I realized like, we're kind of doing that to E3. They're like, fuck, no, cunt.
Yeah.
To be fair.
But they can with E3. It's not a live performance. It's a bunch of trailers.
Mario's not feeding off the energy of the crowd.
Right.
They can't riff.
yeah, exactly. Bubsy's not doing crowd work.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him though.
Hey, you guys like yarn balls?
I don't remember if that was his voice. But yeah, E3's gone. But something that is more here than ever before is the fifth Unreal Engine has been made available to all developers today. Like, you know, some of the ones with a bit more cash and a bit more clout were able to get their hands on it. And have been developing stuff for a while now, but like every single person has access to that at this point. Crystal Dynamics announced they're working on a new Tomb Raider game on it. Things will very much shift. It feels like it's been such a slow, weird, crawling shift over to this new, over to Unreal Engine 5 when like those new consoles have been out for a year and a half now.
Yep.
It started getting shown off before they were out, from memory.
Yes. Yeah, it was in the first PS5 reveal. I think there was a focus on an Unreal Engine 5 game.
Yeah. So looking at least a couple of years from now before it starts becoming the norm for things to be, you know, on Unreal Engine 5 and that sort of next generation-y kind of equivalent of, and which I guess it's the only really big engine that's going for it, like... Some people, but less and less, you know, developers less and less use their own engines.
They go for
either Unity or like Unreal, or some of the big ones still do it. But yeah, that's kind of cool. I really want things to be in this next generation properly. And it's taken so long for that to feel like it's the case and still doesn't.
Yeah.
That'd be great. That'd be really cool. The Matrix thing was Unreal 5. I'm excited for Tomb Raider as well. I really like that trilogy of reboots, especially the first one, but also the second one. I really liked it as an Uncharted replacement, you know, in the years when Uncharted wasn't coming out. And Uncharted isn't coming out in any years coming up as far as we know, so give me another Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Yeah, that third one I think was like, I never really loved any of them, and the third one it felt like they kind of run out of a bit of steam weirdly, so I'm interested to see what another new one will look like, especially with a bit of time off. It could be could be cool.
What have Crystal Dynamics been doing in the meantime?
Marvel's Avengers.
Oh, okay.
You still excited cunnies. For a new Tomb Raider now?
Not if it's a microtransaction co-op online multiplayer. Actually, I don't know. Maybe I'd give that a crack. But no, I mean, surely they know where their bread is buttered with Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Single player, copy Uncharted.
Yeah. And people people told them exactly what they thought of that moldy fucking bread that they put out a couple years ago. So, I wouldn't worry too much about that aspect of it. But yeah, who knows? They haven't really said any details of it, just that they're working on it. And that's cool that there'll be a bunch more Unreal Engine 5 games coming out and that things are moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I guess this is the start of the potential for a bunch of indie, you know, titles coming out on now. Because it's literally like you can download it through the Epic Game Store, right? Like that's how available this engine is.
Yeah, at least with 4, I believe the setup was... and I can't imagine why this would be particularly different, was that you were allowed to use it for free until you started monetizing over a certain amount of income from that particular product, and then you owed them licensing fees.
Right.
It was something like $10,000. I believe that was the case. I'm probably a bit wrong, or maybe entirely wrong. Definitely not completely right.
You don't think there's any chance of you being 100% correct?
It's a Back small yourself, chance. Adam. Crazy things have happened in the past, like when Epic allowed people to make games for free with Unreal Engine, definitely, until you started making $10,000.
Yeah, $10,000 sort of threshold, yeah, which is exactly what happened. But yeah, that's cool. It's very exciting. And like you boys said, let's get into this current gen.
Yeah.
Stop calling it next gen or, you know, the new gen. We're in the current gen.
We're in the current gen and we've been in the current gen for quite a while. Like before you know it will have been. I keep thinking that the PS5 and the new Xbox only came out at the end of last year, but it's a year previous to that.
Yeah.
I've been playing Ghostwire Tokyo this week. That is a PS5 exclusive.
That's a current gen game.
That's a current gen game.
And on PC as well.
Yeah. But it's not a cross gen. It's not a backwards compatible.
No.
And it looks fucking beautiful for it. More of that.
Yeah.
Give us more of that.
So shiny and reflective. Me and Ben both finished it over the last week. Just
Magpies love it. It's shiny and reflective.
It's the main thing about why that game looks so good. I think it's so shiny. Yeah. Everything it looks is. So nice lighting wise that it's
the water effects, the mirrors, the glass, the lighting, I guess. It is it's lighting. It's how that stuff interacts with things in a real physics sort of situation. It's almost photorealistic. It really is beautiful.
Yeah.
What do you think of the gameplay, Tommy?
I'm enjoying it. I agree with what you said last week that the visuals are such a huge part of it. Like in terms of in a lot of categories, it's a 10 out of 10. And then I do agree with you guys that it's lacking in the combat. Could use a little more finesse in it. And yeah, like thinking about if this had have been made to also run on the PS4 and it was a PS4 game and it didn't have that shine in those other areas, it might be a bit more forgettable. I'm not hating the combat, but definitely it feels like you should have some kind of, dodge button or some kind of fast movement button, like a kind of a sidestep sort of thing. Cause it does, you do get into these things where things are being, shot at you pretty quickly. And it feels weird to not have like a button where you can kind of sidestep them quickly. Like you are very...
I totally agree, yeah.
When
there's
you're
no
doing
strafing.
Your attacks and stuff, yeah, you're very glued to the spot. And a lot of the little areas that you end up in that are these kind of curated combat areas where, you've been guided to a waypoint and then, it's not just enemies randomly spawning. It's like they've thought about the area that they're having you in to do this combat challenge that then doesn't really lend itself to moving around very... you kind of get stuck in corners and I'm just finding it a little unintuitive in that way. But yeah, everything else about it I'm super into and I don't hate the combat. It just like you guys said, I think it definitely it feels like a bit of an afterthought. But I would not say that it's to the detriment of the game overall. I wouldn't say that it means that you shouldn't check it out.
Yeah. Because I think weirdly I found if you just are always moving to the left or the right, 90% of those projectile attacks will miss you. So right. I was just always circling like a shark and found more satisfaction in the combat the further into the game I got because it became easier and easier and you could just tear these ghosts apart.
Yeah,
it does become easier even to the point of like the last few bosses. It's like, oh, these are easier than I remember the first interaction with an enemy that I had in the game.
I think once I'm finding it easier, I think I'll find it more fun. Like it becomes
simpler to focus on those stronger areas of the game at that point, and then the combat just becomes this thing where like you really are just whipping through all these enemies, and you're like, haha, I'm a guy
with like these supernatural powers. Like I want to feel overpowered. Like I'm happy for this to be a game where I blaze through and I'm just one-shotting everyone because it's like I want to feel like a cool, supernatural, you know, badass kind of dude. Like, you know, early on now, it's like taking me... Yeah. It's now, at the moment, it's like taking me a few shots to take people down and it's like, it's just a bit of a chore. It's a bit of a slog.
Yeah.
But yeah, presentation-wise, all the other stuff is just, it's so good. The tone, the vibe, even though it is a lot of just, waypoint, open world going to Marcus stuff, there's just something about the setting and the feel of it that makes it feel like it's not just doing that again because it is such a unique kind of setting and tone. And the fact that you are kind of gated, like you're not just like plonked in the world and given the whole thing, like you've got to clear this fog. So it sort of does have those linear elements to it at the same time. It really... Yeah, even though when you really zoom out and think about it, it is just doing a lot of the same open world stuff, but it doesn't feel like it's falling into the trap of the fatigue of that kind of game, at least not for me.
Yeah, I went through and did a lot of the side stuff and some of it does get very repetitive. So I would say like to yourself and to other people who are going to go in, including yourself and to any other people who are going to go in, including your fine self. I just said yourself,
Tommy.
Very sincerely.
Yeah.
It fucking threw me and I felt weird about it.
It too hard.
And so then
your good self, m'lady, m'lord.
Yeah. It's like if you accidentally trip, then you do like a silly little step because you're like, oh, whatever, I just walk weird all the time. It's normal. Right. I didn't fuck up.
And then you do that step for about a kilometer down the street.
Anyway... do all of the side missions, all of the green little ones, they're great. They've all got a little story.
Yes.
They've all got a fun little scenario that you do. Everything other than those, just do it if you come across it. Don't deliberately hunt them out, I think, because there's a lot of it and it's all pretty samey and pretty inconsequential. But definitely seek out those green ones.
And definitely finish the story because I did, as did you, Nox. And I found it very unremarkable and boring, like story-wise only, for the first two-thirds of the game. And then I really connected with like the emotional side, like not the plot, because the plot it remains kind of just an excuse to go from one objective to the next. But the story of the main character, I think it resolves or it builds up in a really... genuine and interesting way, and I think it's resolved in a very like adult way. Like it feels like a very mature story, and I thought it was executed really, really well. And I'm very glad that I didn't just go like, it's getting repetitive. I'm gonna play something else. I definitely recommend finishing the game because it is only 10 hours long.
Right, exactly. It's relatively short if you're just kind of going for it.
I like that too. That kind of restraint in an open world game is pretty rare. It kind of feels like anytime there's a large map that like the minimum is 50 hours and kind of going into this and knowing that if I want to just barrel through, it's I love a tenner. A tenner.
Yeah.
It's the fucking perfect length.
10 out of 10 for a 10.
Yeah. So yeah, I think definitely if you've got a PS5, I think this is well worth checking out, even though we've all had our little niggles with it. I think it still definitely is worth checking out. And I think it's like overall, it's one of those like 7 out of 10s that for some people is just going to be an all-timer, you know what I mean? Like, I think if you're someone who those elements don't bother you and, in fact, you do vibe with them, you'll come away really, really loving this. So, at the very least, if you can get it discounted or on sale at some point. But yeah, well worth a look, because it kind of feels like it's sort of under the radar a little bit, kind of.
Definitely, definitely. It hasn't got a bunch of coverage, really. I would say get it on PC. I wish that I had. I wish that I had played this with mouse and keyboard. I feel like that would have benefited the combat specifically.
Right.
It weirdly doesn't run fantastically on a PS5 either. Like if you're up somewhere high, the frame rate really drops down in that performance mode at least. And it's just sort of weird because it doesn't look at, like, it looks great, but it doesn't look like that shouldn't be handleable.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It's got this weird, it does really feel like it was designed for a PC, because when you go into the menus and the graphics modes and stuff, it's got an option for VSync, which you almost, you sort of never see on, it's like they've just transported.
Not until recently, yeah.
One thing it does that I've noticed is like such a, it wasn't until seeing it in this game that I realized how common this is as like a little trick, where early on in a game, you'll come across a shop. And you go, oh, okay, cool. You can buy your items here, your little consumables for your health and stuff. All right, well, I haven't gotten any of them yet. Better get this. I haven't seen this in the game yet. And then you walk out of the shop and within a minute, you just find nearly all of the stuff you've just bought just lying around on the ground. It's like a pickup. This game did that to me and I was like, I feel like this kind of thing is like pretty common where you're like, oh, better stock up on these berries. Who knows when I'm ever going to see them again? And then, like, the very next area you're in, they're just like a diamond.
It's common enough that it never happens to me because I never buy stuff in those shops because it's always like, right. I know I can get this for free. You are a con man.
Yeah.
You went and picked these up from the nearby cave.
But the convenience knocks, they're all right there at the store.
That's true. It would get me in real life, but in a video game, I'm savvy.
Yeah. Sure.
Speaking of collectibles... I've been playing a bit of Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga.
Okay.
So I'm just working up the courage to talk about this as a 32-year-old man who's enjoying it very much. It's really fun. If you've got kids and they like Star Wars, that's all, like, 100% go in on this.
Right.
It is a really enjoyable and pretty simple, pretty straightforward, but such a charming game. It's got, so you go in and it's got 10 little kind of Lego dioramas on a rotating thing, and you've got episodes 1 through 9 and then a galaxy exploration sort of mode.
Oh,
the way you've got to do it is, or the best way to do it, you go through and play the movies you want to play, and then it unlocks as you go through each of those movies, those planets that you visit in the movies, and then later on you can go walk around these pretty big open world areas that are like, you know, the downtown Coruscant and Mos Espa on Tatooine and all that sort of stuff, Star Wars places.
Star Wars. Right.
It's the one with Hank Solo. Han.
Yep. Yep.
They call him for short.
Yeah.
That one.
Grievous.
Grebo. You got Liam Skywalker. Whatever. Yep. Anyway.
Johnny Binks.
Yeah. Huh?
Johnny Binks.
He makes so much more sense as a little Lego guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, all of those stupid fucking Star Wars jokes that don't work when you've got Liam Neeson sitting in the other half of the frame.
Yep.
100% deliver on comedy when it's a little Lego Jar Jar Binks getting his Lego tongue stuck in a door.
Cool.
Right.
It works so much better. Like, Star Wars as a whole works so much better. It is the best story you could put into a Lego thing versus being the worst story you could put into a movie. You know, not that it's the worst story, but I'm not the world's biggest Star Wars guy by any stretch of the imagination. And
no,
I'm sure
George
there's some
Lucas.
Big ones out there. Oh, well, yeah. Not anymore, probably.
Yeah.
Why do you think he sell it, right? He sold it off for like $1 billion because he's not the biggest Star Wars guy anymore.
Yeah. Mm. And but then Disney walked down the road and saw a big film canister with Star Wars in it and went, ah, fuck! They got us at the shop!
So these probably. Like nine little movie world things that you're going into.
Yeah.
What do they take the form of? Are they a little kind of campaign that's like a sort of truncated version of the plot of the film?
Yeah. You've got kind of open world bits in between, but like it's pretty heavily driving you forward into going through the stories of those movies.
Right. That's cool.
And it's fun. They work well. They're all only about maybe they're less than an hour. I reckon, okay. to get through each of the films. But then you're unlocking these big, big, you know, for a sort of Lego game. They're not like Red Dead big, but there's a lot of stuff in there. These open worldy areas where you're going through and doing these very simple but enjoyable little tasks to get more bricks to upgrade your characters and then to buy more characters, of which there are hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an enjoyable way to go through and look at all this Star Wars stuff. More so even I'd say than like for me watching the movies again, like this is doing the thing of making me go, oh yeah, I remember that. And yeah, I enjoyed right. that when I was a kid. And then having a fun enough game to just really kind of mindlessly go through and tick off some boxes and feel good that you're getting all of the bits and pieces that are in it is fun. And it looks nice. It again, weirdly, I'm playing the PS5 version, weirdly doesn't run as great as you would expect a Lego game to.
Okay.
But looks really cool. Like all the way they do these Lego games and make everything look like, and wait for this, guess a little trick they do. They make everything in this game look like it's made out of Lego.
Oh.
Whoa.
Why?
Whoa.
It's just this like crazy art style they've got.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, right.
And weirdly,
I really didn't see that coming. That's taken me quite aback.
You wouldn't think so, but honestly, it works. Like, it looks great. Like all having everything look like plastic and seeing little reflections of the Lego world in the Lego plastic head and shit like that just is really cool. The jokes and stuff in the little cutscenes, you know, they're not the greatest thing in the world. A lot of it's someone falling over, but a lot of the time, it's all right. You kind of enjoying it.
So that's is Jackass, funny. And that's one of the funniest movies ever. Four
I
of
will
the
say it's
ever.
Probably, I think Lego Star Wars is less funny than Jackass Forever.
Okay, right.
I would like to see Lego Jackass.
Lego Jackass.
Lego Jackass
big
is
time.
A great idea.
Fucking bricks exploding everywhere. Yeah.
Diarrhea bricks.
Yeah.
Well, they have that. Brick. A lot of people get slimed in this and you get like, you know, jokes with Bantha Poodoo and whatever.
Okay.
And you get one of those little one bricks and it just goes squelch onto someone.
I never saw episode 9. Maybe this game is the way I'll consume it. Maybe this is the way I'll take in the plot of episode 9.
Might not be the worst way to do it because I've been going through them in order from 1. And so far, they're pretty faithful to the movies. They've got a lot of the same dialogue from the movies being said by like, you know, Lego close enough sounding actors. And like that part of it is really enjoyable. Just going through these stories in like a much more fun way, honestly.
Right. Simplifying it to its core and being like, and also being like, and this is, we're doing this for kids mainly. Like,
right.
We are adding an element of fun. We're probably removing all of the dramatic stuff that didn't work well in the prequels.
Yeah.
Just honing in on like the classic
story
stuff.
Which is what
the
films began as. It's like, going back to the roots of this being essentially for kids. Adam, before when you said you've been going through it in order and you started from episode 1, bit of trivia for you. The first Star Wars, did you know this? The first Star Wars film that came out was actually episode 4. Like they started with 4. And so
they
did 4, 5, 6, and then they went back years and years later and they did 1, 2, 3.
No, that's not possible. How could you do that? That wouldn't make any sense because people would go to see episode 4 and be like, what the fuck?
Where's episodes 1, 2, and 3?
Well, people at the time didn't know that they were watching episode 4.
But
they
how
didn't
would
know,
you know
that they
who
were
Darth
watching
Vader
episode
was.
Anything. They thought they were just watching. Well, it's because he's evil. You see him like at the beginning of episode 4 doing like evil shit.
There's not even any, like, you know, subtitled being like, this is Dark Vader. the evil man.
Yeah, like, they would need to add like a whole like opening section of just text explaining what was going on. And yeah, that'd make for a terrible movie.
That's just like literally showing like that's not how, you know, that's not so how you make lazy movies.
So I thought it was cool that they went back and they showed you that one of these characters used to be a little boy, because sometimes it's hard to tell that when you're looking at an adult on screen.
You know, well, again, I mean? This to happened just, previously.
Like, to just presume that people are going to know that this adult character used to be a child.
I got freaked out with it the opposite way in Home Alone as well, where I was like, does he grow up ever? They should make a sequel to that.
And then you saw him grow it up.
But yeah, so I'm really enjoying the game. It's you can play through it co-op as well, which is perfect for this sort of thing. You know, parent and child. It's set up perfectly for that. And there's so much stuff in it. There's so much to do. A lot of it, you know, being pretty straightforward and simple. But as a relaxing, easygoing, cheerful game that is just doing a real only wanting you to have fun version of Star Wars and collecting platforming type stuff, it's a good time. I recommend it.
Nice. Okay. I just before we got on this call, I hit the credits in Kirby, and it just gets level design and the whole kind of thing of it really ramps up towards the end. It's great. Final boss, all that kind of stuff, really fun. And then there's a cool little post game thing that you unlock, and been having a lot of fun with that. So yeah, I'd recommend that game in its entirety to anyone who's interested as a, especially during the comedy festival, just as a little unwinder. Been loving it. But, looking forward to 100%ing it, getting all them little waddle dees.
Yeah, that it is pretty satisfying. Going through and collecting shit, same as in Kirby, same as in Lego, same as in Ghostwire.
Yep. Yeah.
Feels good.
Yep. Just prowling around. Are you guys excited? Are you guys excited to return to Monkey Island?
Yeah, the other thing is Monkey Island is returning, or we're returning to Monkey Island. I am as well.
I'm very excited. Yeah, loved these games. The first one was one of the first games I really remember playing. Like vividly remember, you know, each scene. What you know, trying to solve the puzzles. Like it is. A real nostalgia one for me. And yeah, I'm pumped. I'm excited. Big Ronnie G, take me back.
Yeah. So I'm still kind of unclear as to who was who on Monkey Island, because a number of people kind of later
Guybrush Threepwood, he was the new pirate.
Right. And he's seen at least one bigger monkey head in his time.
Exactly right.
But like, so, fucking what's his name from Double Fine?
Tim Schafer?
Tim Schafer is another person who, when they were making Double Fine, was like, I'm the Monkey Island guy.
Yes.
And so there have been a number of Monkey Island guys, but Ron Gilbert was sort of the lead on the first two. Is that right?
I think that's right, yes. I think Timmy Schafer comes in with maybe the sequel.
Right. And I think had been working on those first two, but in a lesser capacity.
Yeah, and it sounds like Return to Monkey Island is intended to be the third after LeChuck's Revenge. So that would indicate, to me, that Ron Gilbert was the first two, directed the first two. And this will be, another of his ones as sort of an auteur at the head of the ship. So
and he's very apropos. I think he said that, like, at least the third one will still be, like, sort of canon and whatever. He's not going, like, this is the real number three, like they do every now and again for Terminator.
Sure. But,
which is cool for me because I loved all of these games. I've still never played the Telltale ones, actually, but those first four are fantastic.
Yep. One of the all-time great franchises. Maybe we should do a Monkey Island band camp or something.
I would love to because it's coming out this year. They said 2022, so it's a great time to go back and...
A point-and-click band camp, maybe. We can get some of the other ones in there, too. Day of the Tentacle. Sam and Max's.
You're talking.
Now okay. I'm squawking. All right. But yes, I'm up for this big time.
Same. Not heaps of information, but new Monkey Island coming this year. Ron Gilbert's Devolver doing
Digital,
it.
Devolver Digital Publishing, Lucasfilm still involved, obviously, with the license. But yeah, sounds sick.
Yeah.
One of the best themes in any video game, too. Mm-hmm. Pirates. speaking of pirates, I...
Speaking of, okay.
Nah, we all found a way to watch. I don't think so. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 came out.
In cinemas now. Yeah.
Two years ago, we went and saw our final film before the pandemic together, which was Sonic the Hedgehog 1. And they're in cinemas now as Sonic 2. We've all it managed to dodge COVID at different times and be able to see Sonic 2.
Yep. I've never had COVID, so yeah.
You've dodged it a bunch of times.
I have.
It was all leading up to this, you watching Sonic 2.
Yep.
The motivation to avoid COVID.
Possibly Jim Carrey's final film too. Apparently he said another thing of like, it'd take a lot to get me to do another movie ever.
Wow.
He's maybe done with them again or something.
That's
He's
a shame.
He's a
telemental
because... man, it seems.
Mm. Right.
That's a shame because he, you know, he was, you know, my one of my maybe my favorite thing about number one, and was kind of thinking at the time like, oh man, this would be great if this just led to him just getting doing a just one final score, come back for one fucking big banger comedy with the right director in the right role. Damn, I'd love to see him, you know, having fun up there again, or even doing a great dramatic thing like he's done.
Ace Ventura 3, and then he can stop.
Sure.
Or The Mask 2. I'd love to see a Mask sequel.
Oh, yeah.
If he did, I guess they already did Dumb and Dumber and it sucked, but if he did The Mask and Ace Ventura and like they he was the Riddler in the next Batman movie.
Oh, yeah. They did. I remember there was a Mask animated series at the same time as there was an Ace Ventura animated series, and I believe they did a crossover.
There was a Dumb and Dumber one too.
Yes, there was. I liked the Dumb and Dumber one.
Jim Carrey was spending a lot of time animated. Why would he?
Yeah. Not, I mean, The Mask is kind of really the only one that lends itself to an animated
It's pretty funny to like the if you take Jim Carrey and make him an animated character, you remove what's unique about Jim Carrey.
Right.
The most animated man in real life. Yeah.
This guy looks like a cartoon. Well, now everyone looks like a fucking cartoon, and so he's just normal.
They should have done like a everyone else is in real life, and it's a cartoon of the mask. Yeah.
A Roger Rabbit thing.
Yes.
That's except everybody else is and everybody's animated except for Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I guess that makes the most sense, yeah.
So it's like a backwards Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Oh,
or
you know
forwards
what
a, Roger Rabbit when yeah, Bob you know Hoskins what a, goes into Toontown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know what a great Carrey role would be? Roger Rabbit sequel and have him play the Christopher Lloyd role. The like undercover cartoon character who's disguised as a human. But he's sort of not getting away with it because he's so rubber-faced. Everyone's like, you're clearly a cartoon.
Right.
Well, he's very cartoonish again in Sonic 2.
Yes, he is.
It is. If you saw the first one, you know exactly what this movie is. It takes everything from the first and does it again and more. And I didn't hate it. I felt almost exactly the same way as I did about the first one, where like, this movie's fine. It's kind like goes, you know, hovers between the worst kind of just filler, so that just happened joke, and sometimes when it's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I feel like we all were like, we liked the first one more than we expected that we would. We're all like, that was a pretty decent kids movie. Mm-hmm. This one, I feel like they zero it. You can tell this from the trailers, but they kind of zero in a lot more on the kind of video gamey stuff of Sonic, like Jim Carrey as Robotnik looks more like Robotnik does in the games, and Tails and Knuckles are in it, and there's a lot more sort of like the Chaos Emeralds, and the first one sort of played it very straight in the sense that it was kind of real world with this little alien kind of guy running around. This one, there's a lot more of that kind of other stuff in it. And I feel like those are the best bits. Anytime it kind of goes back into the human world and it's kind of trying to draw more of this unique stuff from the movies in, I was way less interested in it.
Well, the first one, it was like, not to compare them too much, but it was like a Roger Rabbit of like an animated character becomes friends with a normal cop.
Right. Yeah.
And they develop that friendship, and there's a lot of fish out of water comedy, and there's a bit of Sonic, you know, realizing that he can be a hero. And there was a fun arc, and it was, I think, good performances and a good script. This one, I think half the problem is it just takes the humans and puts them somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right. It literally separates the two storylines. So one of them is animated video game characters fighting each other, and plus Jim Carrey, who is as animated as a human being can be, as we've covered. And then the other time, you're cutting back and forth to a bunch of people at a wedding.
The wedding scene was so weird. Because, I weirdly liked all the just like the animated characters fighting. I was like, this is more in line with what I want to see out of a video game adaptation movie. It's like, Sonic's having a big punch up with Knuckles and they're snowboarding and all this stuff's happening.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, there's this weird plot where we're in Hawaii at a wedding and the groom is like an undercover.
We're back
on
the White Lotus.
Agent. It's like, what the fuck is going on here?
I don't remember the wife from the wedding from the first movie at all. And then after stuff kicks off at the wedding, she gets pretty funny for a little bit.
Yeah.
She gets a few chances to be very funny.
So that's the sister from the first one that hates James Marsden. And it doesn't happen much. We see her like twice. But then, she's the masseuse from The White Lotus and I guess has had a bit of a career blow up in between. And she's very funny in it. But it is just a weird storyline to have in there. Like you said, what there's all this undercover fucking sting operation shit.
Yeah.
And it also feels like the movie climaxes about an hour 15 with the end of that storyline. And then it's like, oh, that's right, there's a villain.
Now you get kind of a Lost World Jurassic Park thing where like, now suddenly there's a second problem and it's come back home. Like, I thought it did a fine job of like moving Sonic's character on and like a pretty good job of having him progress during this and figure out like, okay, I got to be a bit responsible because I got these powers and all that stuff. It's not crazy complex, but I also liked that all for how much it felt like more action is in this one. It didn't feel like it became too predictable in that way or too boring and just flashy, kind of like Eternals type of Marvel movie action.
Right.
It felt more like 90s fun action movie action.
It felt like they were trying to do a bit of an Indiana Jones adventure story for a lot of it, which I just think it was paced poorly. Like it probably didn't have to be 2 hours long. You probably could have cut out the entire wedding segment and just made it a bit about meeting Tails, Knuckles being more of a difficult opponent than Sonic has faced before, and then the stuff with Dr. Robotnik. But I think it's a really, again, a solid kids movie that if you love Sonic, you'll probably like as an adult as well. It's just, movies are all 2 hours long these days, and they don't need to be.
It definitely had a bit of unnecessary, like you felt the time while you were watching it. I did like Idris Elba as Knuckles. I thought he did great.
Yep,
he did
just
really
like
good. Yeah,
a good funny version of a dumb guy who's too serious.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought
all the characterizations are spot on. Like whether they're game accurate or not, like they all work as real movie characters.
It's not
lacking there.
I love that it's like, Ben Schwartz, get a comic actor in for Sonic and then just get a bit of stunt casting with Idris Elba, like big name, doing Knuckles. And then it is just so funny that for Tails they're like, well, we couldn't possibly have anyone else do it other than the person that does Tails in the video games.
And they did well in this.
Yeah. They do a great job. Yeah. But
there's a bit more fat, I get. But I felt that about the first one too. But like just some unnecessary, like, why does every fucking movie need a dance battle in it? It's so annoying.
Yeah,
least funny things that's ever happens in any movie.
As with the first, I think all of the music choices were bad. Like pretty cringeworthy.
Out of
doubt. And like weirdly, like, it felt, especially with the music, and I don't know why this is, but whenever the music choices came up, I could feel the 35-year-old Simpsons fan who wrote this music in there.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Why does Sonic like Run DMC?
Yeah.
Why is the
theme from A Summer Place playing here?
Because the only
reason you know that theme is if you're 80 or you watched The Simpsons.
Yeah. Right. Fucking Uptown Funk being the worst. Oh, yeah. If it was 5 years ago, maybe. But never again will that song be cool to use in anything.
Unless it's in like another 20 years in like a Wayne's World kind of way where it's like, hey, this song is so old now. Yeah.
They had Jim Carrey's turn as Dr. Robotnik. having him be like an annoying, too old to be, and like still thinks people are flossing type of guy.
Yeah.
That worked for me. Him being like later haters and all that stuff. He's like an irritating dad, which is a good way to make a villain in a kid's movie because he's not too sinister, but you really don't like him.
Yeah. All of the pop culture references that the characters make, like Sonic has a couple that are just bizarre. And then I think it's Robotnik at one point says, "You're about as useful to me as a backstage pass to a Limp Bizkit concert." Is that what he says?
Is exactly what he says.
What does that mean?
That's a really weird one to chuck in there. There's a lot of offhanded, like, "All right, Winter Soldier," and all this stuff.
Right?
Like,
yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
He made a joke when his sidekick gets knocked out of like, "Oh, now there's going to be a report into a aggressive workplace or something."
Yeah.
It's like, that's a weird joke to make in a video game adaptation movie. Yeah, like, is that meant to be about, like,
I'm sure there was a couple of them where Jim Carrey just started doing stuff and they were like, "All right, Jim Carrey."
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff, like when Sonic is, he's kind of left by himself at the start of the movie in the house and he's just kind of living it up. He's like, makes
a big
bubble.
The scene where he jacks
bar.
Off when he's at home alone is, I think
and
really
like,
weird too.
It's funny, like, the way that he kind of behaves where he's like going like, "Whoa, where?" And he's like, it's like, you're by yourself. Like, who are you mugging to? You know what I mean? This kind of like weird, like, halfway between breaking the fourth wall but kind of not really, where he's like striking all these poses and it's like, you're by yourself, like, who who is it, who are you performing to?
He's kind of like meant to be a friendless shut-in at that point, so and that is what you do when you're a friendless shut-in, you pretend there's a camera around.
That struck me as ridiculous when like part of the plot line for James Marsden is like being worried about Sonic not having any friends. It's like, man, you're hugging a fucking CGI blue alien hedgehog. I'm sorry.
Some of that.
Remove that from the movie.
There's a couple of eye lines and stuff, like, especially with, the mum and the dad and Sonic, where it really doesn't look like they've even seen a mock-up of what Sonic looks like.
Which is
it really doesn't work.
Yeah. Which is why, like, when you just have the bits where it's all the animated characters interacting, it's like, oh, this is just like a cartoon movie. This is kind of cool. Because, again, zero chemistry between James Marsden and his wife. And, again, the wedding thing where the sister of that's getting married is like, was any of this real? And it's like, who are these people? Like, we met them. The presumed knowledge of, like, we remember them from the first film and care deeply about this relationship that we've just... It's like,
well,
these stakes of making us feel really heartbroken. It's like, who cares?
The goatee guy is introduced in this one, right? Because
they go
through all the stuff of...
The groom.
Having said all of that, if you have an 11-year-old...
Who was
a 9-year-old when they watched Sonic the Hedgehog 1.
Yep.
And you take them out to see Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and then buy them a copy of Lego Star Wars afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
When you send them home back to mum's after your weekend with that kid, you are getting a good review.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is, like we said 25 minutes ago, it's a great movie for kids.
It's a fun kids movie. It's a fun follow-up too,
for Sonic
overall.
Fans. It is. It
I
is
thought
honestly,
they,
yeah,
they
going in the right
They ramped up the
direction.
Action. They did more fun video gamey stuff. One thing I liked that there were a lot of kind of like Easter egg-y things that were generally done pretty elegantly, like Robotnik
Easter
hiding out in a place called Mean Bean Coffee, and like the instruction manual for the big robot that he's in like a Genesis box art thing. I thought was kind of cool. But then James Marsden at the wedding and his phone ringing and it's the music from the first level of Sonic. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, but what's... So in this world, what's that music from? Like, what... Like, why
it's
does
the
he
theme song to that town they live in, I guess, right? Like, plays out of the PA speakers at the train station there. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. To try and stop kids committing crimes at 1 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, fun film.
Yeah.
Not as unique or interesting of a thing as that first one was. Like, the big budget they threw that first Sonic seemed so weird at the time. And it's kind of cool that now that just seems so normal, and the video game movies, I guess, have turned this weird corner where, like, they're coming out and they're all like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Uncharted was pretty bad, but whatever.
I still think that these two are the best of any video game movies, just because they know exactly what they're aiming for. Like, they have a genuine understanding of what to do with the property, rather than, like, Uncharted, it's like, well, I guess you tried to make an Indiana Jones movie, but you just failed at it.
Exactly, and you didn't really seem to understand who those characters were, but this is,
I mean,
not from the Mega Drive ones, but from the use of Sonic over time, this is the interesting things about Sonic being, like, powerful but young, so he's maybe a bit brash and he's got to learn to rein it in. Tails is smart but unconfident. Knuckles is dumb but very noble and loyal, and you know, they get all of that stuff.
And I mean, it's a shame that there'll be no more Jim Carrey Dr. Robotnik. Like, if he really is retiring,
if it takes away,
like, he is honest, like, he's not as good as he used to be, but he's Jim Carrey. He's great as this over the top villain. Like, I don't see anyone else delivering anything on that level. They have to obviously go in a different direction, but
totally. Ace Ventura 2, I still, for whatever reason, like the most out of all of his movies. I don't know why, but if these two movies had come out in 1994 and 6, you wouldn't blink. So Jim Carrey is doing that level of Jim Carrey, but not at
totally.
Exactly.
I read a thing earlier about how when they before they kind of announced this, after the first one had come out, and, you know, it was a bit of like, oh, you know, I'd be interested in a sequel. And Jim Carrey had talked about maybe doing Robotnik in a big fat suit for the second one to make him more like the games. So if he doesn't come back for 3, maybe that's the direction they go in. They just get Mike Myers in, just fat bastarding it up. Because you need the big, really round Eggman in his little flying kind of sphere thing that he has.
Mike is back. Great. He's got a Netflix series coming out. So he's back as a... But yeah, I guess, who else from the 90s? What other comic actors? Eddie Murphy?
Oh, yeah. He's get him in as like the voice of Metal Sonic.
Right?
Yeah.
That'd be cool. There was a post-credits sequence. I guess we've mentioned one or two plot points, but haven't really spoiled this movie at all.
We've spoiled a bit of it. Doesn't like, but you know.
Did you guys see the post-credits, or did you know what it is?
Yeah.
Chappie shows up, right?
Chappie from the movie Chappie. They're crossing the streams.
He's like, I'm Metal Sonic now.
I guess stop listening now if you don't want to hear, for whatever reason, what character is featured in the post-credit sequence, or skip forward 30 seconds. Shadow.
Yeah.
Right. I forgot about him.
Less interesting than seeing Tails turn up at the end of 1.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to see, give me those fucking Chaotix guys. Give me the big big alligator. Give me the big chameleon.
I'd love a big alligator, yeah.
Give me Big the Cat. Give me
that
Amy.
Stupid little bee.
Yeah. Get those guys in the mix.
But yeah, I mean, we could. Obviously, we have one animated antagonist. Maybe there's another one as well that is, voiced by some funny person. But I can't see the next one being as good as the second one. And the second one was a little bit worse than the first.
Right. Yep. And yeah, there's a Sonic 3 and a TV series about Knuckles.
Right.
Yeah. That are both in production.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, they're all right. And if you're the right age, then that's who it's made for. And who am I to comment on the likes of an 11-year-old?
And if then you've got 20 video games to go and play if you have access to them, if you're that 11-year-old. Like, it's it is cool to be like, oh, who's this? Oh, well, here you go. Here's a Sega Genesis Mini or whatever they're called.
This game doesn't mention chili dogs once. Yep, none of them do. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Yep.
this film, more than the... The first one didn't really feel like this to me, but this one felt like you're sick and you've got a fever, and right before you go to bed, you play a few of the Sonic games, and then this is the kind of like weird fever dream that you have, where it's kind of bits from the games, but then not really. Like, all of a sudden you're in Hawaii at a wedding, but then Sonic does kind of show up in that. It's like, and you wake up, you're like, oh, wow, that's so fucked up. Like,
to be fair, it may have genuinely been currently medically your experience.
With yeah, it. I don't know that you did watch the movie. I think that that is exactly what happened to you.
All right, let's wrap it up there for another week on Filthy Casuals. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for links to all the stuff that we have. We've got the Patreon. You can get a bonus episode every week. We've got the YouTube channel where we're putting up a bunch of videos at the moment. We've got the premium episodes on Bandcamp that we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
Wow. Shadow. I can't believe it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.